Welcome back to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your Wiretaps Podcast for Monday, April 27th, 2020. I'm joined by Alex Brown. Alex, what's new this week?
Everything's good, Graham. Just trying to stay safe like everybody else during COVID-19. And I hate to say it, Graham, but you've only got me as a guest today.
Yeah, last week's episode was a real fun episode. We had a couple of special guests. Definitely go back and listen if you have not. We had two candidates who were facing really challenging decisions in terms of where to go, and there was a bit of a twist ending, so a fun episode. We'll try to, you know, measure up this week, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. So, Alex, what's going on right now in the applicant pool? Like, you've been on the site a lot, checking out Livewire. What are people thinking about right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's just very tough with COVID-19 and all the uncertainty out there. You know, folks still trying to figure out, you know, decision-wise, quite active, actually, in terms of, you know, trying to figure out their choice for the school that they plan to attend. So that's quite interesting in terms of sort of weighing in on some of those conversations we're going to have. We're going to highlight one of those today on this episode. But on the Livewire front, Kellogg, sorry, so used to the conversations with Kellogg, but Wharton released its round three interview invites, and last week that's created a lot of conversation on the wires, and we're seeing some movement off a couple of schools' wait lists. And quite frankly, Graham, I imagine the waitlist conversations are going to continue deep into the summer, as you know, decisions. I mean, it's just such an uncertain time right now.
Yeah, I was surprised to see. I mean, I think you have a lot of things happening. More people are applying in the late rounds because, you know, maybe they think they can trade up, so they're throwing in applications late. Maybe they're we're thinking of waiting until next year, but they're like, wow, this might be a great time to apply. And so there's a lot going on. Yeah, Wharton releasing their invites and such. But I agree that everything is permeated with this sense of unease and uncertainty around, you know, like, will there be school in the fall? And if so, in what format? And you know, what's going to happen to the international crowd? You've got the president of the U.S. making announcements about immigration bans. And I don't believe that applies to, like, student visas, but it does have implications in terms of the U.S. job market and its kind of friendliness towards non-U.S., you know, to say that lightly, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got to create a lot of uncertainty for the international candidate that has their dream, you know, option to go to, you know, their U.S. based business school, and it's like, wow, immigration visas getting, whatever the rhetoric has been over the last week. But I mean, it's incredibly frustrating, uncertain.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, tough times currently, and I think it makes it extremely difficult for the admissions officers at these top business schools. They've got to make decisions too, or at least their schools have, in terms of what they're going to be doing this fall. And we know, you know, we the second run of our survey, we're going to be releasing some of that data in the next week in terms of over this week in terms of, you know, the uncertainty in the app. I mean, it's just tremendously difficult, complex, uncertain environment right now.
Absolutely. So in terms of other stuff that's going on, we continue with our B School During COVID-19 series, where we've been virtually visiting different campuses at top schools and getting current students to weigh in on how is B School when it's virtual, just to help, you know, particular prospects and those with offers to sort of understand what the experience is like in case it applies to them when they get to campus. And so we've hit MIT, Wharton, Stanford, Yale, Kellogg, Booth, there may be others. So definitely check out that series. It's really interesting to hear from the front lines. And what I've liked about it is that the candidates, the current students rather, they're really blunt. I mean, they're telling you a lot of the important stuff, like what's the software platform that schools are using and how's it going and how are they dealing with, like, club activities or just friendships, you know? So it's been really good, great kind of voices from the front lines, if you will. The other thing we did is, now that GMAC has released the GMAT online, you know, you can take either the GRE or the GMAT online. And so we set up a comparison chart on our website that tells you everything about cost, software requirements, but also, you know, just things like how does the exam differ from the in-person version and how many times can you retake it or can you retake it? So really useful chart. Check that out if you're curious and you're kind of weighing the two tests. Other than that, you know, the community, as you said, Alex, continues to be really vibrant. You've got tons and tons of likes from comments you've been leaving. I noticed that, you know, our starred users, seems like we have more and more starred users. Those are individuals who kind of have amassed a lot of likes for the content they've shared. And you were mentioning, how many likes does that group have across the whole gang of them?
Collectively, 2,000 likes. So it's really interesting. We started this sort of process of, you know, allowing people to like comments, and then for individual commenters to accrue their comments, just like they do on Reddit. So that was kind of where the idea came from. And yeah, we've got probably 30, between 30 and 35, what we call star contributors now. They have been really impactful in the community. It's really interesting to see, watch it all develop. I mean, I'm just a bit of a geek about online communities anyway, so I just really like to see how it all happens. But yeah, absolutely fantastic community. And I think, you know, given again that all this uncertainty with COVID-19 and stuff, we can become, or we are becoming, a sort of a safe place for candidates to discuss stuff, and get really good feedback from their peers, and intelligent feedback, I would say.
Yeah, every time I log in and go to kind of add comments, I'm sort of like, oh, you know, some of these star contributors have already put in some really great comments. I'm kind of out of a job, you know. But in all seriousness, it's great to have that input. Without further ado, why don't we just jump in and do our Wiretaps candidates for the week? You picked out one Decision Wire and two Apply Wire entries. So given that it is decision season, let's start with Decision Wire and talk about Wiretaps candidate number one. So this person has been accepted to Chicago Booth, Michigan Ross, and Northwestern Kellogg. They're starting this fall, and they want to get into consulting after business school, ideally at Bain, BCG, McKinsey, or they also list Deloitte. GMAT score was 730, GPA was 3.4. This person's located in Chicago, and when they posted their kind of results to the site, they said, "Hello, I would love to get advice that would help me to make a decision between Booth and Kellogg." So they've narrowed it down to those two. They indicate they're looking to recruit for MBB, and by the numbers, it seems like both schools do really well. So they want to get a solid education and have fun, you know, meeting new people and making lifelong friendships. So they also did kind of chime in a comment to say that they really liked Kellogg because it's kind of known for that sort of fun social culture. But they're just wondering, you know, what about Booth? Because they're drawn to Booth's brand as an econ finance powerhouse. But they're sort of wondering, like, is the social experience not as strong? So what do you feel about this? I mean, this is a tough call. They're two great schools. But what would you say to this person?
Yeah, I mean, these are two great options. Well, three great options. Obviously, they narrowed it down to between Booth and Kellogg.
Yeah.
But yeah, they started off with three great options. What I want to do, Graham, rather than, I think you highlighted the sort of what they were thinking about in terms of the stereotypes, right? So you got Kellogg is the sort of more collegial, fun community, like that sort of team experience, whereas Booth, you know, they can navigate their own curriculum, less of a cohort structure, in more urban and so on and so forth, right?
Yeah.
And being more data driven, I think that was another thing that was thrown out there. But what I want to do, Graham, again, to illustrate the quality of community here, is just read out this particular comment.
Okay.
And just sort of bear with me, and hopefully I don't garble it too much, but it's quite long, but it really drives home the sort of advice that our community is offering to itself, right? So I start off. I have similar professional interest considerations to you and was deciding between Kellogg and Booth following round one. So I wanted to share my perspective in case it's helpful to you. I visited both schools numerous times, including class visits, interview days, and admit weekends at both. I went into the process leaning heavily towards Kellogg due largely to stereotypes. I'm outgoing and was looking for a social collaborative community, so I assumed that Booth would feel like less of a fit to me relative to Kellogg. I think this is one of the most untrue stereotypes of top business schools. Most Booth students, faculty, staff, alumni have been incredibly friendly and helpful. The students are very socially active. Most students live in a few buildings adjacent to each other, which I think fosters this sense of community. And that, when I read that, it sort of reminded me of the Wharton experience, actually. And the school has grade non-disclosure, so students don't seem as stressed about academics as people seem to imply relative to other programmes. Kellogg is a fantastic school, and no one would fault you for choosing it. But I would argue that you can get the same quality of social experience out of Booth if you want to, and I would strongly disagree with letting this stereotype influence your decision. Focus more on city versus suburb, your personal interactions with the communities, clubs, programs of interest, etc. I ended up choosing Booth and can't wait to get started in the fall. So again, Graham, that's a beautiful sort of illustration, I think, of the quality of the community that we have, sort of offering advice to each other. The original poster responds, "Your comment changed my perspective on how I should view things. I did a lot of follow-up research and talked to a bunch of current students at Booth and came away with the same conclusion that you did. Excited to join you at Booth in the fall. Let's flip that stereotype." So not only was the original comment really interesting and showing that sort of quality of the community, but it clearly had some influence on this final decision.
Yeah, very much so. And I think it is interesting. I mean, this is a really common debate, Kellogg or Booth, right? And I think obviously, you know, we've got to take with a little bit of grain of salt the fact that the person who gave the advice has already committed to Booth. So they're, you know, they're waving the flag clearly. But, you know, I mean, look, people make these decisions and it is helpful to share, you know, how you go about making that kind of a decision. I think one of the things that was missing in this discussion and that it sounds like, you know, the poster was really trying to get at is holding aside the like social stereotype stuff and, you know, Kellogg being team friendly and communal and Chicago being more numbers and whatever. Like I agree, that's a stereotype. But I do think it would be worth looking at, for example, the reliance on the case method at Kellogg, which is, you know, their heavy case method. It's not exclusive, but it's a school that really does use a lot of cases. And I think that is well suited to, say, jobs in consulting, right? I mean, it's really, I mean, the case method is perfect for that. So I think that's one thing. The other thing I was just going to say, you know, it sounds like this person's kind of made their mind up. But the thing that I was going to say also is just that, you know, Kellogg, I feel like a few years ago, Kellogg was sort of struggling. And when I say struggling, I mean, you know, within this sort of group of the seven best MBA programs in the United States. So it's not really a true struggle. But, you know, their facilities were like outdated. They've been falling towards the back end of that group of seven schools. But, you know, now they have kind of a new campus, new building that's been generating a lot of buzz. And I think that they're sort of on the rise a bit. And it's interesting to just watch the ebb and flow of these programs over the years, because when Chicago Booth first got the donation from Booth and changed their name, they, you know, that suddenly led to a massive rise where they were able to leapfrog Kellogg in many respects and the rankings and such. So it's been this kind of back and forth. And I feel like Kellogg is kind of coming back, you know, back at them a bit. But it is a really interesting thing. And I just would say you can't go wrong at either of these programs, but, you know, you need to figure out your fit. And I'm really thrilled that this candidate was able to get good advice from our community, talk to students at the school, and come away with a decision, because that's all that counts at the end of the day.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And assuming this candidate does end up going to Booth, they'll never look back. If they ended up choosing Kellogg, they'll never look back. These are two great options. And for any individual, one could trump the other. Absolutely.
Agreed. All right, well, let's move on and talk about our first ApplyWire candidate for this week. So this is Wiretap's candidate number two. So this person is applying to Babson, Berkeley, Georgetown, Stanford, UNC, and UVA, and they want to start in the fall of 2021. So they're getting an early start on that application process. They have been working in government administration, post-MBA, thinking about venture capital and or entrepreneurship, GRE score 321, GPA 3.58, 4 years of work experience to date, located in DC, and hoping to end up in California, Virginia, or North Carolina. I've never seen anyone with that kind of, you know, range of geographic destinations. So it's kind of interesting, but they know what they want. In terms of their background, they talked about how they went to a top 50 undergraduate business school, graduated early while working a job throughout. They spent a year and a half working in real estate after graduating from undergrad. And also, it sounds like they did something to do with a sporting event. I'm thinking like World Cup or Olympics or something, a major sporting event. And then they moved on to work in government. directly supporting senior leaders at the Department of Defense as a civilian. And they, you know, had some nice milestones in that role and have since moved on to focus on public-private partnerships. So, you know, that's the background on this person. What did you had some back and forth with them, and I weighed in too, but what's your take on this candidate? Because there's a lot to like about the non-traditional kind of work experience, but I think there's some holes too. So what's your take?
Yeah, I mean, I think the experience is super interesting. It's different, in terms of sort of government sector work, and they suggest, it says, I played a large role in the creation and rollout of a major strategic initiative impacting a portfolio at the value of $250 billion plus. So it sounds like some very interesting experiences, of which would probably, you know, differentiate themselves in the program, right? It's not your sort of traditional banking, consulting, tech sort of business, government business. So from that perspective, it's going to be very helpful. They're obviously going to need to talk about how that, you know, their impact in these roles, as well as, you know, what these roles have taught them, how they've grown, developed, and so on and so forth, as you would in more traditional roles. Their goal is to go into entrepreneurship, venture capital, whatever it might be. I'd like to learn a little bit more about that, quite frankly. And, you know, if you want to go into entrepreneurship, which is very fine, it'd be really good to sort of really have a concept or a notion in mind of exactly what you're planning to do, and why sort of you've got to get to business school to get ready to prepare for whatever this venture is. So that just wanting to go into entrepreneurship can be very broad and so forth. So tagging it to something specific would be very helpful. The school choices, I think they need to be refined and developed a little further. They seem all over the map, literally, as well as in terms of, you know, reach, target, and safety. So you've got quite broad sort of selection of schools that could be further looked at. GRE score 321. If you're applying next season, I mean, it's a decent score. It's probably not going to eliminate you at these schools, but if there's some improvement there, that could probably be quite helpful. If you can nudge that up a few more points, it could sort of reinforce that this is actually a really strong candidate coming out of the government sector, tied to really well-developed goals. I can really see a strong candidate here, Graham. I can also see a weak candidate if they don't tie it together, if they don't really sort of push and take care of some of these potential issues.
Agreed. Yeah, for me, there's kind of like three concerns, and you touched on some of them, but I feel like, you know, the GRE could be better, especially if they want to, you know, look at the kind of Stanfords or Berkeleys that are on their list, right? So that's an issue.
Yeah.
Number two, the work experience, I'm intrigued because they've done some government work, which is, as you say, less common. But also there seems to be, you know, they spent a year and a half after graduating from school doing something completely different with real estate and working for a sporting event. So it seems like they, you know, took them a little while to kind of find their path. And related to that is this sort of pivot into VC or entrepreneurship, which we know, you know, VC is really tough to crack if you're not coming from like maybe a banking or successful entrepreneur kind of path. And so that's a concern to me. And that entrepreneurship, well, okay, but what's the idea? Like you say, we need more clarity from them. So that's the second thing I'm worried about. And then the third thing was just more of a logistics thing. Like they indicate they want to be in California, Virginia, or North Carolina, but they don't have UCLA, USC, or even Duke on their list. And those are schools in the States that they're thinking of that are, you know, top MBA programs, right? So
right.
I just was wondering like how they went about school selection. I mean, that's all. I mean, they have, you know, the others on the list mostly make sense in terms of geography. But in any event, I like this candidate. I really think, you know, as you say, like they could stand out easily because of this Department of Defense work they've done, and hopefully they have some really cool idea that relates to kind of their experience in government and public-private partnerships, and that weaves everything together and makes for a compelling story. Because if they come in and have like a low test score, foggy goals, and can't weave their work experience together, then it's sort of, it could spell disaster at the top schools at least.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it could go either way kind of thing.
They got some time. They're applying for next season. They're not rushing it into round three or whatever this season. So that's very good. So hopefully they're listening. And I like you say, I do think this can be a strong candidate. I think they've got a little bit of work to get there.
Yeah, and I will say, I love seeing candidates this early in the process. So on the one hand, we're like being a little critical of the career plan or maybe the way they're pitching their work experience or school selection. But the reality is, as you say, they're an early bird. And so they should be foggy on some of this stuff. They're just getting started, right? Yeah. So I think they'll be fine. Yeah, again, hopefully they're listening, can take on the advice and move on from there.
I think we might break a record, Graham. We're only 20 minutes in. We might get done before the 30-minute mark for the first time.
I don't. We will see. Yeah, we always have trouble keeping to our word on the 30-minute mark. So let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is an apply wire entry as well, and this candidate is currently looking at Berkeley, Columbia, MIT Sloan, Kellogg, and Wharton. They have been working in consumer goods, at least for the time, that's their most recent kind of career experience. They also would like to get into either consulting or maybe stay with consumer goods post-MBA. And some of the companies they listed are Nike, Peloton, Equinox, and then they have an other, so they probably have some other ideas too. GRE score, 323, GPA, 3.4, and they've been working for 5 years. This candidate is interesting in that they're located in Sydney, Australia, but they're not Australian as far as I know. They graduated from what they called a Tier 2 Ivy. I wasn't really aware of the tiers within the Ivy, but I guess that means not Harvard, Princeton, Yale. So let's assume, you know, Brown or Cornell or something, right? So that's where they went for undergrad. They did 4 years of sales and trading at an upper middle tier bank. And then pivoted into strategy and corporate development in consumer goods. And that's what they've been doing for the last year or so. And they actually moved from New York to Sydney to get an international experience, presumably with that, you know, CPG company. They want to stay, as I said, in that field and would love our feedback. They're wondering about kind of the so-so GPA and GRE. That's kind of their words. They said mediocre, I guess. And they did take a math class and got an A+ to help bolster those stats. So what's your take on this person? They also were a student athlete during undergraduate. They added that into the comments. But anything you want to say about this candidate?
No, I've got nothing to say. No, I think obviously the really interesting thing about this candidate is that they chose to relocate to Sydney from New York. I think that says something about an individual that wants to take on that international experience and hopefully self-initiated that decision and made it happen. So, I mean, obviously a lot of our international candidates, a lot of those folks tend to, you know, maybe have work experience in 2 or 3 different countries and so forth. But oftentimes our US candidates are less likely to have traveled. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of a stereotype, but so, you know, I think you see that sometimes. So anyway, the point is this person made a deliberate decision to go to Australia. Hopefully, you know, they're getting good sort of experience doing that, as well as backed up with strong recommendations from their workplace, and you know they've shown good impact and various other things. I think that would all be very good. So I think that's the piece that stands out to me, Graham, is that going to Sydney. So as long as that shows like all the right, you know, signals, that will be really helpful for this candidate. The numbers, yeah, they're for top schools. These are so-so numbers, and frankly, the candidate knows this. They've taken a math class to help compensate an A+. They've got a 323 on the GRE. I think if they ended up retaking the GRE and bumping that up a few points, if they're really targeting the very best programs, that might be a smart thing to do, especially if they're applying next season, which I think is the case. They've got a few months to do that. Hopefully, we get through this COVID-19 period and the accessibility of the tests is a little easier or whatever it might be. You know, this candidate doesn't have to get the applications into the first round, I don't think. I think there's enough diversity in this profile to allow them a bit more freedom to apply a little bit later if they need to do that. Yeah, overall, Graham, I do tend to really like this candidate. You know, the athletic stuff during school, very good. I think they're doing some triathlons and Ironman stuff or whatever crazy stuff that people do these days with all, you know, fitness. So that's very good. And they're on, I think they said they're on some boards and stuff for extracurriculars. I'm on the junior board of a foundation to help teach water safety and swimming skills in underprivileged communities. So as long as they're doing that kind of stuff through genuine sentiment and that's something that they're passionate about doing, ADCOM loved that kind of stuff. So yeah, lots to like here, Graham.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not worried about the numbers. I know that, you know, the candidate seems pretty worried about it, you know, 323 GRE and a 3.4 GPA. And I would want to see the transcript from the undergraduate institution, but frankly, like a 3.4 from an Ivy League institution, whether it's, you know, Yale or Brown, it doesn't, I mean, that's a decent GPA. You know, obviously if I were to see that, like, they got horrible grades in the whole, you know, final year of their, you know, schooling, or if they like bombed every single kind of business related type subject area, okay, maybe we'd have a red flag. But frankly, I'm not worried about the GPA. It's a decent GPA. It's only slightly below average at the very best schools, and it's from a good school.
Right.
So I think that's okay. GRE, I mean, you know, Wharton's average, I think last year was 324. So they're in the ballpark, and they did mention that the score they have was hard earned. So I think that implies they kind of really busted their butt to get it. Clearly, if they felt like they could get a 327, sure, that would be knocking the cover off the ball, and you know, they'd have a really good chance of kind of, you know, waltzing into some of these very top schools on their list. But I think they could get in with the existing numbers. I'm kind of banking on the fact that they have really great recommendations from that New York experience in banking, and ideally that they've, you know, are able to talk to their current employer and so have those sort of two different industries weighing in on their skills. And I do like the fact that they went from the kind of sales and trading New York finance thing to a completely different ballgame of kind of CPG and living internationally. So and as you said, you know, they're a marathon runner, they're on boards. I really like this candidate. I think it's obvious to me that they could add a lot to any of the schools on their list. And yeah, I mean, as you say, I think some Americans travel, but you're right. The norm would be that most Americans certainly haven't gone and worked overseas. It's more common now than it was 20 years ago, but it's still, you know, when you compare to, say, a German candidate or an Australian candidate, it's like, you know, not even close in terms of the amount of overseas work experience. So yeah, I like this candidate the same as you. I mean, I think there's a lot of potential here, and they just need to execute on their application strategy and, you know, whatever that's, you know, just making sure that the essays are good, the stories, you know, reads well, and they can pull it all together. But I'm rooting for this person.
Yeah, very good. And you use a few sporting analogies. Is that baseball or cricket that you're knocking the something off the ball?
I know. I get into trouble all the time when I'm talking to non-US citizens or people who don't own baseball, but that's a baseball. Knocking the cover off the ball is, you know, you hit the ball so hard that the leather covering on it just separates from the ball itself. So there you go.
Very good.
There's your baseball. I'm very much missing baseball in the time of COVID-19. That is something that, you know, I feel it's unfair for me to complain, but it is, you know, one of the many things that's missing is kind of sports, right? So it's difficult. But hopefully we'll be back.
How are things in Paris, Graham?
Things are okay. You know, we're still under kind of confinement.
Yeah.
The weather, it's almost like, you know, Paris is not known for having beautiful sunny weather. But ever since we've been confined, there has literally been maybe one out of like 30 days has been a rainy day. So it's been beautiful weather as we sit inside and stare out. But no, things are okay overall. And I think we've started to flatten the curve here.
Good.
So things may be starting to open up a bit in the next few weeks. So we shall see.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah. So we're going to do it. We're going to be under 30 minutes for our podcast, which is great. And, you know, Alex, thanks so much for picking out the candidates that you did. We will be back next week with more profiles to review. Obviously, if anyone is ever interested in coming on the show and talking with us about their candidacy as a prospect or as a decision, you know, someone trying to make a decision, we've done it. We did it last week. We're open to it. So reach out. You can contact us. Just hit us up at info@clearadmit.com. And yeah, Alex, thanks so much for making time and for picking out these candidates for this week.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Graham. Stay safe, and everybody out there, stay safe and best of luck.
We'll see y'all next week.